It's 8:08. Good morning. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with the superintendent of Park City Schools, Jill Gilday, along with Amy Hunt. She's the chief academic officer, talking about the online learning taking place in this Park City School District. Also, I'll be talking with Rob Harder, executive director of the Park City Christian Center. He's got an update on how the center is serving the community during this COVID-19 outbreak. And then finally, Park City Municipal Community Engagement Liaison Lynn Warpeak talking about efforts to connect neighbors during the outbreak. She'll be calling in as well. And like every school district in the state, the Park City schools are closed. Teachers are preparing lessons online. Students are learning to learn remotely. On the phone to tell us more about how it's working at the Park City School District, I have the superintendent of schools, Jill Gilday, along with the chief academic officer, Amy Hunt. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
Superintendent, the decision was made to close the schools to teachers. So what does that mean? We had heard that the district actually sealing the doors.
No, we are still in we are in what's called a full telecommute. So teachers could run in if they need something, if they need to make a copy, if they need to grab a resource, they can certainly do that. But we are trying to get really deep sanitization, right? Every inch of the schools we would like to be cleaned. And so we are in the process of doing that. So the more our custodial and maintenance team can work on that without disruption, the better.
Okay. So teachers are able to kind of come and go as they need?
Yes, but they are not required to. They may do full telecommute, which means they, you know, if they don't have to come in, they certainly, you know, don't have to make the trip. If they're able to do everything from home, that's absolutely fine.
Okay.
Our principals have been really creative as well. You've probably seen some of them on Facebook or on YouTube doing some announcements and things, you know, so they're trying to keep their staff together, but that's virtually.
Yeah. We had heard last week and certainly recognize that things change very fast, that last week no cases of COVID-19 reported in the Park City School District. I think that came from the Summit County Health Department. Since we can't test everyone, I mean, did you provide some information to the health department, or how do we know this?
Right. No, we have basically been getting self-reports from families who have gone and had testing, and very often they will report a presumed positive, meaning their child or themselves have a symptom or multiple symptoms. So we are, you know, keeping tabs on that, but we just know with the Summit County cases that we would be naive to think that there would be nothing up here, you know, so we are trying to do everything we can to prevent the spread of this particular virus.
Sure. So is that still the case, though, that we don't have any reported cases of teachers, students, or staff from Park City School District?
We do have some presumed positives that our families have called in. So waiting for confirmation on some of those from the health department, but basically, you know, we're taking people at their word.
Okay.
So my letter came out based on one family that had called in.
Okay. And the letter was posted online?
That is for staff, right? Letter just explaining to them that they may now move to full telecommute.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about online learning and teaching. Most teachers then doing all of their work from home. Is that the case?
That is correct. All of us have laptops. We did actually send home our second through fifth grade laptops as well. So the kids do have access. I do have a little hint or tip for the kids. If they let their laptop go all the way down, you know, lose charge, they may have to go to the parking lot to log back onto the internet because everything is still filtered just the way it would be if they were on campus. So if something happens and their laptop loses connection, they can come right back to school in the parking lot. Once they're recharged, log back on, and it should connect.
Okay. What's happening at the district office? Are you all also telecommuting?
We are all. For us, it's a little bit harder, Leslie, as I'm sure it is for any business. So we still have bills coming in, bills going out, people writing payroll. So we do have some in and out, but again, it's only as needed.
Okay. Amy, let's bring you in, too, and maybe you can talk to us just about the online learning process. I mean, talk to us about the scheduling of classes and how it works. I mean, just so that one science teacher may be doing a class at the same time a math teacher is doing one, we've avoided that?
So
one of the keys that we've been able to put in place has been a little bit of flexibility. So when we first informed parents that students in the 6th through 12th grade were going to be doing their classes exclusively online, we let them know that they would have some flexibility to be able to have kids online when it worked with their schedules. So what this means for our teachers is that the interface that we use, called the Learning Management System or Canvas, allows students to check in at any time of day, to be able to see pre-recorded pieces or to see assignments, and to be able to complete them as they're able to log in and do so. So there's no need for us to create a schedule for students to check in at certain times. But it does mean that families need to maybe sit with their students and help them think through, you know, when will I log in? What will I do first? What will I do next? So that students are able to accomplish all of the things that they need to online. One thing that we're working with our teachers on is trying to be cognizant of the fact that moving from a face-to-face environment to an online environment is different than we might think. And sometimes it's easy to overschedule online. So we're really working with teachers to make sure that they are making the amount of work that's there for students appropriate. And we're really trying to make sure that our teachers are checking in with our students to see and get some feedback about how they're doing online.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about managing participation, but are any of these sessions, are any of them live, so that if they were live, that a student might be able to kind of remotely raise their hand to ask a question?
Yeah, so teachers are letting students know when they have specific times that they'll be online. Many of them are holding what I would consider like office hours, so that students can come onto the interface and they can chat live with through a chat option on the LMS. They can raise their hands as a participant on the LMS. And our teachers are also letting students know they can email anytime and trying to provide some expectations for students around when teachers would be getting back with them. There's plenty of opportunities for students to let teachers know that they need some additional support.
All right. Can we assume that everyone now has access to Wi-Fi, which is necessary to do this in the first place?
Well, we have gone out and surveyed our entire district to find out which families may need some additional support. We have put out more than 50 Wi-Fi hotspots through a contract with T-Mobile, and have ordered some more. So as far as what we've been informed at the 6th through 12th grade level, those families are completely Wi-Fi accessible now. And now we're shifting and working on our younger students in K-5. So our hope is that within a couple, at least another week here, when the new devices come, that we should be able to have all our families online.
So like these hotspots are like in parking lots or something? Is that where they're happening? Just given that
so
we don't want...
The hotspots are little devices that come from T-Mobile that go right into the family's home. Oh. And they look like a little box that's just a little hotspot. And then they're turned on by T-Mobile, and they're able to just use them almost like we would a hotspot anywhere else.
Oh, okay. So those are in the homes themselves where people are staying, we hope.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they are.
And I don't know if, Jill, if you need to jump back in, but, I mean, how are we managing participation and role, you know, to ensure that students are still learning?
Right. So we do have, for the elementary students, pre-K through fifth grade, we did send home a suggestion that parents just maintain a log. We also have the kids in second through fifth grade on their iReady reading and iReady math, which keeps them moving at their level. And, of course, we can then see if kids have logged on. I've actually watched some of our teachers then phone in or FaceTime in with their families, with their students, and, you know, be able to say, oh, Bobby, you know, I see that you logged in, and I see you did this much reading and this much math. So it is a way to help keep us connected to what's happening in the, you know, in the at-home learning environment. But we do want to reassure parents, you know, not to worry terribly about students regressing, because every kiddo is in this boat, and they're all, you know, we are going to meet the kids where they're at when they come back. We think it's much more important for the families to really just connect with their children right now, read them a story, have the kids read to them, write a story, you know, make them feel safe and secure, because we're in such uncharted territory. We want kids to be able to look back at this time and feel they were well taken care of, and we feel like that's the most important skill we can probably transfer to the kids right now.
Yep. Do we have students who haven't logged on? And if that's the case, what do teachers do?
Right. So teachers have reached out to kids that have not logged on, either via a phone call or an email. Mm-hmm. So teachers are aware of this. At the high school, they have been really creative. 15-1, basically, they have a ratio of every adult in the high school is responsible for checking in on 15 students. So it may not be their own teacher, but almost like an advisor, keeping an eye out. We also have our guidance counselors checking in and looking at all of that.
Okay, so you feel like you've kind of herded all of the cats then?
You know, there are probably always going to be things, you know, that we haven't thought of, and we are just counting on communication from our constituents, you know, if something is missing. But knock on wood, so far we are hearing, you know, that people do feel they've got lots of choice mm-hmm. in what the kids can do. Many of the teachers made something that looks like a bingo board, you know, so the kids can pick and choose different activities from each content area. You know, lots of creativity has gone into this, lots of innovation. I really could not be more proud of our entire community and our entire staff. They've really jumped in and been absolutely amazing.
And what about the kids who have IEPs or the 504s? How are they being helped?
Right. So as you might imagine, an individualized learning plan, there are certain things we are not doing currently. So we are not doing nursing services. Because the kids are home, so we're not providing that at school because the kids aren't at school. We do not have physical therapy or occupational therapy at this time. So once we're back to some semblance of normalcy, those kids will qualify for something called an extended school year and will receive, you know, those minutes. They'll just go, you know, longer into the summer.
And then the special ed teachers then, are they then not working?
No, they absolutely still can provide modifications, accommodations, coaching, support, as do our academic or instructional aides. They can log on. They can also support our children and keep them moving forward.
Okay. Let's see. Real quick, the state testing we know has been canceled. Any way that we're going to be able to assess how our students are going, especially given the problem that we had a year ago?
Right. This year, I think we recognize, you know, that there will probably not be data, but of course, you never know. You know, if we do get in at any time the rest of this year, then we would still do our different benchmarks and our different assessments to check in on kids and their progress. It does sound like ACT is even providing some vouchers for kids to take the test, the SAT or the ACT over the summer. So I think, you know, we'll keep an eye on that.
And so if students were to get back into school, would we still end as the scheduled calendar date? Or you mentioned maybe going longer?
We will. As long as our students have logged in and our families have kept a log, then we have already submitted a distance learning plan to the state. And the state has already approved districts to be able to use this e-learning method.
All right. Let's see. What about the master planning process and the work that the school district has hired out to assign cost with the multiple different options? Do we know anything more at this point?
We do. So the board has shifted its board meeting to March 31st. So whether that is in person or whether that is virtual, that is still on the schedule. That gave us just a little bit more time to figure out how, you know, our Zoom meeting or our live stream might work with everybody electronic. So that is still in process, and we do anticipate a presentation from our architects on, you know, what they've come up with, really, again, listening to what the community had provided last year as input. So we are still moving forward in that process. We're still feeling very good about the company that was hired. Really, they're doing an amazing job.
And just given what we've seen happen in the last week, does this introduce the possibility that children can learn online at home for at least part of the days, kind of preventing the need for future school buildings?
Right. That would be we have to look at long, intermediate, short-term strategies, I suppose. I think what all of us are recognizing who are educators or lifelong educators is this is hard for all of us because part of learning is so much about relationships. This happening in the fourth quarter of the school year is probably the best time it could have happened because we have strong relationships built with our families and our students. Trying to do this, you know, all the time remotely, I think would be an extreme challenge for all of us. I think we relish, you know, being with our students. I mean, that's one of the joys of this profession. And I know our teachers are feeling, you know, anxious about this as well. So we would much rather see face-to-face environment as being the optimal way of building connections with our kids and building their academic, social, emotional, behavioral skills. But we are going to do, as I said, you know, and everything we can during this challenging time to model resiliency, ingenuity, perseverance, so that the kids know, you know, we are all hopeful we're going to get back together and be able to see one another. I know even our high school kids have not totally given up on the idea of being back to school. And the class of 2020 has assured me that they will count this as their senior skip day. So they won't be skipping again. They're missing one another.
How are programs like PC CAPS and some of the CTE classes working? These are so hands-on.
Right, definitely modeling the work environment of the future, which also has a lot of people working in teams globally. So the kids do have all of those same opportunities to use a Google Hangout or a Zoom-type meeting to be able to get together with their mentors and to continue working on their projects.
Okay, anything else, Amy or Jill, you'd like to mention?
We want to remind our families to think about the four M's. So mental health, you know, taking deep breaths and staying positive for their children. Mindfulness, movement, you know, doing some movement every day. And then just thinking about, you know, a lot of this is out of our control. So we have to just demonstrate that, you know, what is in our control. You know, we can create a schedule if that works for our family. We can take a break when we need to as a family. And really trying to find some meaning and connection during this unprecedented time.
And Amy, did you want to add something?
Just how much we've appreciated the support of our community. They've really been positive and helpful in this transition to online learning and to at-home learning. And we have pretty fantastic staff that have really stepped up to the plate and made sure that they're making those connections with kids. And so we just feel really fortunate right now that we have all of the support we need to be able to continue learning at home seamlessly.
Okay. Amy Hunt, Chief Academic Officer and Superintendent of Schools, Jill Gilday. Thanks for your time this morning.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
It's 8:34. Good morning. Well, the Christian Center of Park City has become a hub of human help. On the phone with an update, I have the director of the Christian Center, Rob Harder. Thanks for joining us, Rob. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good to be here with you.
Hey, first of all, for those at home doing a lot of spring cleaning, now have bags of items, I'm guessing, for your thrift store and boutique. Do they need to hang on to them?
Yes, thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, they do. We would love to take them. We took them last week, but we just realized, again, just for everyone's safety, for my safety of my staff, we're asking people just to hold off, and we will hopefully resume them as soon as the health department says, here's the green light, go for it, and we'll let you know.
Okay, we just need to hold off and wait and see until we hear further word.
Yes, exactly. We're going to leave at this point through this week, we're going to hold off. And then we'll find out more. Well, we're coming up maybe a solution where they could drop it off at a certain, you know, different times, like Recycle Utah is doing, kind of basically in the evenings and early morning, and then we could sort through it. So we're sorting through that to make sure, again, it's super safe for everybody.
So a lot of resources then just directed towards your food pantries. What, the one here in Park City and the one in Heber City?
That's right. That's the main thing, yes. So we are still operational. We're going to be open 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., I think we've mentioned before, we're still doing the same thing this week, where it is we do ask people to sign up online. And if you're in Park City or Heber Valley, just sign up. So that way we are prepared for you. We're basically putting together a box of food. So it's a grab-and-go system, much like the restaurants are doing. The one slight change, Leslie, this week will be, it's going to be a little bit more of a drive-through, again, just to make it safe for everybody, even another step safer. I talked to the health department, and we're going to do a drive-through, meaning where people normally would drop off donations of furniture and clothes, et cetera, we're asking the people that are looking for the food pantry just come into that same spot. So you just drive through our roundabout, if you will, in the backside of the Christian Center, and we will load up the food into your car. And that way you don't have to get out. Again, just a little bit more social distancing there, but you can still get the food you need. But we just encourage people to sign up ahead of time.
So do they get some choice about what they get, or you just kind of fill the boxes up?
You know, a little bit. Again, we can't guarantee, you know, what we have, right? It's all what we pick up or what has been already given to us from the resorts. And Bill White Restaurants and several people have been super generous with what they've donated because they've closed, of course. But we can't guarantee. So it's not like a restaurant where you're ordering. However, there are some things you can mention to us, whether it be gluten-free or dairy-free, things like that. We will do our best to accommodate that. The other thing we are mentioning to people, if they need dog food or cat food, we do have that available as well. And then we got a little bit of toilet paper. And so we're giving each person a bit of toilet paper and feminine hygiene products, anything else that are in addition to food that you may need as well.
All right. You are asking people not to drop off food. Is that correct?
At this point, yes. What we're trying to figure out this week, and we'll keep it on our social media and send an email out, we're trying to figure out a way that if people, number one, we'd love for you to support us. We've had a tremendous amount of support. So I want to give a shout out to this community. I mean, I've been amazed at how generous this community has been, and we've gotten a tremendous amount of financial donations for both the food pantry and the basic needs assistance. We want to make it available if people want to order food, and they just purchase it and then send it to Christian Center. We're trying to figure out how best to do that. I know you don't get the tax deduction doing it that way, but that's what we're trying to figure out, if there's a way to kind of have a win-win for everybody. So stay tuned for that. But for now, yes, we're asking people not to donate food just because, again, we're trying to reduce the exposure points of that food before it gets to people.
All right. So what do you continue to need? Just money?
At this point, yeah. I mean, we're just to keep our operations going, and we are. We have a feeling it depends on how long this goes. But if we continue to have, a shutdown where everything is shut down for the next couple of weeks, the food that we've received from the restaurants and the resorts has been fantastic. But those won't last forever. Typically, we get food Monday through Saturday from the grocery stores that's fresh, and that has dripped down to very minimal, and understandably so. I mean, they're cleaning out their shelves every day, it seems like, and they don't have as much to give. So we don't have as much fresh food to give. So that would be one of those things. We've already made two orders. We're making another order today just to supplement food so that we have extra food. So that's where the money's going. And then the second big one, Leslie, is that we've had a lot of people. In fact, we've had close to 120 people basically at the end of last week sign up for either rent assistance, utility bill assistance, medical bill assistance. Basically, they've been laid off. They don't have the ability now to pay their bills. And so we have this basic needs assistance fund, and that's where we're doing a lot of work right now of just working with people, doing a needs assessment, and making sure, you know, we're sending money directly to the apartment manager and or the power bill. So that's one of the next big places where we can support people is through our basic needs assistance.
Yeah, I think last time we talked, the Community Foundation had raised about $70,000. I think they're up to like 200, yeah? And how much of that?
Fantastic. You're right. So again, the community's been amazing. We've received about 25,000 of that. I know that they've given it to People's Health Clinic and Peace House and some others. So they're doing a great job of spreading that around. And people, again, have just responded so generously. And it's very impressive, actually.
And then can you tell us how many people you've been able to help? Any idea?
Yeah, so last week, because we count everybody who comes through, and we ask how many families, of course, and how many individuals in your family, adults and children, et cetera. And last week alone, we served almost 900 individuals between our Heber and our food pantry in Park City. And then our basic needs assistance, we had 120 people sign up. I have a feeling that's going to double this week.
Yeah. And in terms of you're doing this all just with your own staff, you're not using volunteers at this point, is that correct?
Yeah, and I would just want to say thank you so much. We've had so many people offer, you know, volunteers. We love that. But we, yeah, again, just to protect everybody. And also a little bit of a, for us, we're trying to keep our hourly staff at the same hours as much as possible of what we had before this big COVID-19 response. So we've been just rerouting our staff into doing mostly our food pantry operations and some other things around the center. So that's why we're doing that for now. The primary reason, again, is just for safety for everybody involved. I don't know if that'll last forever, because I think down the road, I've had multiple conversations with the Interfaith Council and other people around the community. We want to make sure that people that are shut-ins, elderly, that need food delivered to them, or people that have, you know, other health issues, we're hoping to develop a delivery system, again, that's safe and done well, and that would be something where we'd love to have some volunteers that are willing to deliver food. And it could be one of those where literally you drop it off at the porch, ring the doorbell, and leave, and there's no interaction per se. You can be very safe, but also get food to people who really need it. So that'll be something to stay tuned on. We're trying to work that out this week to see if we can get that going.
Okay. And then also just wanted to mention, in addition to the food pantry, your counseling services also remain open. Have you seen an uptick in that?
I'm glad you asked about it, Leslie. Yeah, we have. It's interesting. Even just over the weekend and today, my wife and the other counselors have mentioned a very high uptick in people wanting to talk and wanting to get together. Initially, I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding, or just an understanding of how you do counseling through telehealth. It's just different than meeting somebody, you know, face-to-face. But because of the circumstance of everything that's going on right now in our culture, and particularly with the earthquake last week, I think it rattled a lot of people. And so yes, they are full with mental health counseling. But we encourage people, because, again, we can generate so much focus on the counseling and we can do all of it through telehealth. So it's, again, all social distancing. We encourage people to contact our counseling center today. They'll be available, anytime between 9 o'clock and 5 o'clock today. They can set up an appointment. If they're a new client, just set up an appointment for the first time. If they already have a counselor and they've been meeting regularly, you can reach out to the counselor directly, or, again, contact Heather, who's our primary administrator. But we encourage that, because I know there's a lot of people that are just shaken up by all that's going on, and it's really super helpful and therapeutic to talk through with somebody all that you're thinking about, all you're feeling, how to work with your kids if you have kids at home, all of that.
I did pull up the page here, 435-649-2260, extension 1, or email counseling@ccfpc.org if somebody needs those services. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I just want to say again, thank you to the community. I've been amazed this last week. I think the phrase that's been going around is, what a year last week was. And it's so true, it felt like that. But thank you to the community. It's been incredible to see so many people sending, you know, financial donations or just notes of encouragement saying, way to go, keep it up. Let's do this together. We're in this together. And I also want to give a shout out to my staff. They've really rallied and stepped up, both in Heber and Park City, to make sure we're serving those who are most impacted and those who are really on the margins that often don't know where to go. So I just want to say thank you to the community. Thank you to my staff.
Okay. And all of these that we talked about will remain in force at least through this week. Things could change depending on if things change. Yeah.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. We're in close contact with the health department. And so, yes, we're hoping to keep that open as long as possible. So we'll let you know otherwise.
All right. Rob, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Rob Harder is the executive director of the Christian Center of Park City. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, after wrapping up an appointed term on the Park City Council, Lynn Ware Peake stepped back into her job at Park City Municipal as community engagement liaison. She joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this is the same job you had before you left to accept the city council position?
Yes, it is, community engagement liaison. They filled that position when I went back onto council for a while, when I went onto council for a while, and then it was vacant, and they weren't able to fill it, and they put out another recruitment, and I applied, and here I am again, and I'm so glad, especially I've been in the position about 3 weeks, and I'm so glad, especially in this time of need of, really helping out our community and stepping up, and all hands on deck at Park City Municipal. So
what
glad
does,
to be a part of it.
What's the job entail?
Well, a lot of the job, right now it's these couple projects I'm working on that we'll talk about in a minute, the Neighborhood Coalition Network and another group where I've convened all the organization and people in the community that work with vulnerable populations. And of course, that's expanding by the day, as in a way we're all vulnerable. And then, you know, the job is also within the communications and community engagement department, boots on the ground, you know, working with the Main Street businesses, and that will expand as well once the whole arts and culture district, boy, it seems like a long time now since we've even talked about that in the last 10 days. You know, the focus has shifted, but that will be part of my job, you know, working with residents, working with HOAs, working with anyone who is impacted by or needs information about what the city is doing.
Okay, so what's this Neighborhood Coalition Network then? And I mean, what does it look like?
So what it looks like is I've had the opportunity to work with a core group of people from a bunch of different neighborhoods. There are about eight of us that have kind of put this together, creating a framework for little pockets of neighborhoods within larger neighborhoods within Park City, and it's just, you know, Park City limits, to basically say, hey, are you a neighbor that knows a lot of people in your neighborhood? Are you an HOA president who has access to emails or phone numbers of a lot of people in your neighborhood? If so, what we want to do is create a network of neighborhood coalitions that can get information out. You know, not everyone is on Facebook, not everyone's on Nextdoor, not everyone listens to KBCW or reads the Park Record. There's a lot of information to get out there, but mostly it's timely, accurate, and crucial information from Summit County Health Department and from Park City. And so it's just that kind of basic information that we want to send out.
So how are they getting the information then to their people? I mean, are they going door to door?
Well, there will be a few people who do that, going door to door. And we've talked about, you know, how you would print up a flyer and make sure that it's sanitary so people feel, you know, safe that if something makes their way onto their doormat or under their doormat, it will be, you know, safe and won't have the virus on it. But otherwise, text message, you know, some neighborhoods use text message, some neighborhoods use email. And a lot of these little networks are already set up kind of in informal ways, and then a lot of them in more formal ways through HOAs. You know, I have some HOAs that they have access to, you know, 225 homes. And it's a really great way, and I think it'll be, you know, I've got a list that I sent out to, I think you received that this morning, of about 80 people who have said, yes, I'll help. You know, if it's just a resident, if you're in a neighborhood without an HOA, people have said, listen, I'll take these 20 homes right around my home, and I'll figure out emails, you know, phone numbers, and if not, just to leave a flyer on the door. So our first information will go out tomorrow, and then we'll keep updating. And it's not going to be, you know, inundating people with information, but any new update that comes from Summit County Health Department or from Park City Municipal will, you know, will be sent out probably, you know, during this time of, you know, a relative emergency once a week, if not more, if there's important information.
So, I mean, we're talking, you know, what, 3,000 homes? How do you get something to everybody?
Yeah, and, you know, somewhere in between 2,500 and 3,000 homes in the Park City limits, and with about 80 or so people on this list, we figure if you, you know, do the math, it's somewhere around, you know, 30, 35 homes for each person. Well, that said, you know, some HOAs are really big, so they'll be able to take on a bigger load. But if you're in a neighborhood without an HOA, and, you know, if you know 20 of your neighbors right around you, that's a good way to start. And, you know, Leslie, I think this is, you know, it's more than just about information. It's also about that sense of connecting. And we all know this. I mean, we have, you know, really rekindled that sense of wanting to connect with our neighbors and to make sure people are okay and that they have what they need and they're not feeling isolated and lonely and vulnerable. I just got an email this morning from a woman who feels like there's no one in her neighborhood, and she's kind of scared. And so really reaching out to anyone who may feel vulnerable is also what we want to do, in addition to just getting out some good, accurate information.
And you're looking for people who will pass out the information you're asking them to pass out, not information that others may want to pass out.
Right, right. But of course, as soon as we establish these networks, and we want to do this also for the future, for being able to connect better to neighborhoods. And, you know, I've taken this model from Sally Elliott, who does it so well in Prospector Neighborhood. And, you know, she gets out her own information, but then also, you know, our information will come from the city and, again, you know, from Summit County Health Department in Summit County. But, yeah, so looking for people, and I'll tell you, the neighborhood that I don't have a lot of contacts for, I just have minimal in the Erie and also Aspen Springs, and I'm sure I'm not thinking of, you know, a bunch of other neighborhoods, but those are some that if anyone's listening and they live in either of those neighborhoods, they can let me know. I'll rattle off my complicated email. It's Lynn, L-Y-N-N, dot, Ware, W-A-R-E, hyphen, peak, P-E-E-K, at parkcity.org.
Okay. What about getting information out to our Spanish-speaking community members?
Yes, so we've got some people who will go through the neighborhoods and, you know, in apartment complexes, thinking, you know, like Aspen Villas. And so in their case, they have, you know, an office and an HOA or a property manager that can help us get out the information. But already people like Diego Segarra have gone, you know, door to door there and let people know what they need to know. So all this, you know, this information will be in English and Spanish.
Okay.
But I can also use more people from those neighborhoods if they'd like to help.
I wanted to also ask you what you know about, apparently there are reports of J1 students still stranded in town.
Yeah, so we've heard a lot through another group that we have convened, the Vulnerable Population Virtual Working Group. And we've met 3 times in the last 10 days. And what we have heard is especially students from Peru and either Uruguay or Paraguay, I can't remember, their governments just closed the borders with no advance warning. And in the case of, like, Argentina, the president there said, you know, you can come for the next 48 hours, but then we're closing the borders. So a lot of these South American countries haven't had a lot of cases, so they're closing their borders sort of proactively. So what that did was stranded a bunch of J1 kids here. There were probably about 100 kids here as of last week that hadn't, you know, didn't know how they were going to get home, and they're out of a job, and hopefully they have a place to live, but of course they're not going to be able to pay rent. And I just literally said goodbye to the Peruvian young man who has been living with us. He is flying to Miami because, you know, with the hope that at least if he's in Miami, that when the borders are open up, it'll be easier to get there from Miami. But it's a bit of a desperate situation. I know the resorts, Deer Valley and Park City, are really working to try to help out these kids, in addition to those agencies that create the contracts for these kids to come to town. As far as I know, I mean, there still are some kids here. And
it sounds like you were telling us about how you're working with the kids who are stranded here, not unable to get home to South America.
Right. And so their employers are really, now their former employers are working with them, especially Deer Valley and Park City. And then there are a couple of the agencies that the kids have gotten their contracts through to come to town. One of those people lives in town here. And so he's working around the clock to try to get these kids, you know, just to have provisions while they're here, but then also to get them home. And so, you know, one by one, they're trying, they're trying different things to get home. I don't know if you heard me talk about our J1 student that lived with us that is going to Miami right now to try to at least wait there until the borders to Peru open up.
Yeah. Okay. If somebody does need help, I mean, what are you doing to help them?
Well, you know, a lot of those kids are being directed and they're already familiar with the Christian Center, as the Christian Center seems to be a convener for those kids throughout the season, holding Tuesday night dinners, and they do a great job there. So some of those kids have contacted the Christian Center, but in terms of what we can do is just help them, you know, make sure they have a place to live, and we'll continue this vulnerable populations working group. We've got a meeting in a few hours to just talk about what can be done, and it's convening all the service organizations. So, you know, we feel like we can help these kids out until they get out of town.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Lynn?
Well, again, if anyone's listening that would love to help in their little neighborhood, just let me know, or my phone number. I'll give out my phone number. It's 435-640-3931. And I wanted to mention, I heard from Diego at the Community Foundation, and that fund now is at $230,000. They've also granted, just in the last, you know, few days, $60,000 to various organizations around town. And that's, you know, a great thing. I heard another nice story of an HOA here in town had this balance on their balance sheet, and they donated it to the Christian Center. So, again, whether it's the Community Foundation or the Christian Center or any other organization you support, it's wonderful to see the generous outpouring.
Okay. Lynn, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.